talk about them. Our topic for today, however, is Pesach related still, and I'd like to talk to you today about Gebrochot. We spoke last week about Kidniot and saw that there was an ancient minhag of Kidniot going back at least 1,000 years. Gebrochot is a much more recent thing, or is it? We'll see. Maybe it's not as recent as people think. It's associated, or at least it was until about 20 years ago, associated with the Hasidim. Now we live in a Gebrochot-free world to a very large degree. It's almost impossible to buy a commercially made cake with matzah meal in it. Well, it's not almost impossible. You have to shop around. It's very hard to find. It's very hard to find something which is mezonot for kiddush on Pesach. Everything is potato flour. If you want kiddush for makom suda on Shabbos or Yom Tov morning, it's very hard. I always end up having to wash, etc., etc. Of course, I grew up in a Gebrochot, intensive Gebrochot environment, where knedlach were de rigueur, and Pesach without knedlach was, you know, like Pesach without a seder. My grandmother, Aleha Shalom, used to make these enormous matzah meal knedlach, which sat in the soup, big cannonballs, and they were quite delicious. We will be speaking today about knedlach. You'll see there is an entire halachic history and halachic literature about knedlach. And we'll see this is a real issue. Knedlach and the Chasen Sofer, Knedlach and the Vilna Gaon. We'll see. You didn't think it, but actually Knedlach figures looms large in our history. So let's start from the very beginning. First of all, we have to talk as well in a broader way. As when is a minhag not a minhag? At what point do you turn around and say, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. Why are people doing this? Or at what point, no, people do it, the Jewish people have a minhag, the minhag is a minhag, and it has a certain chashivut because of the Jewish people. Let me take a non-Pesach example at the beginning, which I think is instructive. In Shulchan Aruch, in Yoridea, on the issue of Vasa v'chalas, the Shulchan Aruch brings down a halacha which is well known, number one. Kedera shebishul ba basar. If you cooked meat in a pot, lo yivashel ba chalav. Don't cook milk in the same pot. So far, no surprises. Aval, he says, im shal me'etleit. If it's more than 24 hours since it was last used, kodem shebishul ba, before you use it now, havalei notin tam ivgam. Then the taste which is in the pot is a taste which is nifgam. It's gone bad in a certain way. Meaning you're not allowed to use a milky pot just because it's been over 24 hours since it was last used. But the food that you cooked is fine. If by accident you cooked meat in a milk pot more than 24 hours since the pot was used, the tavshil is fine. But the pot is no good. The pot is traced. You just traced up a pot. You'll have to kasher it. Or if it can't be kashered, you'll have to throw it away. That I think everybody knows. Comes in the Ramon. Vadin kitsui kedera, what about the lid of the pot that you just traced up? Kedin kedera atzma. Well, the lid has the same din as the pot, meaning if the lid was more than 24 hours, then it won't mess up the food. No problem. Then he says, v'yesh machmirim b'kitsui. There are some people who are machmir with the lid. Lomara may say, da'af al pisha ein ben yomo, even though it is more than 24 hours, it's not a ben yomo, it hasn't been used in the 24 hours. Dinu ke'ilu haya ben yoma. It has a more machmir din. The pot lid has a stricter din than the pot itself. And even if it hasn't been used for 24 hours, we treat the lid of the pot, ke'ilu, it has been used for 24 hours. V'chein nogin, and this is the minhag, he says, v'ktas mekonomen, in a number of places. V'chein ani noyek, and this is what I do, says the Ramah, mipnei ha-minhag, because of the minhag. V'hu chumra, but at the end of the day, it's a chumra, belotam, and it's meaningless. There's no basis. There is no reason on earth, he says, to treat the lid of the pot differently to the pot. But there's a minhag to do that. I've no idea why, but I do it anyway. Why? Who am I to mess with the minhag? I'm not messing with the minhag. The minhag is a minhag. I keep the minhag, says the Ramah. Even though the Shach brings down from the Ramah's other writings in the Darchei Moshe, number two, the Shach says, Hadarchei Moshe, which is also the Ramah, so he crowed like a cockerel, which is an expression in Aramaic, means he was very upset. Ala minhag hazeh, on this minhag, v'siyum dvarav, and he says himself, if I only had the strength, avat la minhag hazeh, I would break the minhag, I would cancel out the minhag. Ki hu minhag tos, it's just wrong, Ve'ein lo tam lismoch alav. And there is no reason to rely on it. However, he himself did. And you see, it's very interesting. The Rama himself, he has this kind of, dichotomy in his mind. On the one hand, halachically, the minhag is nonsense. On the other hand, the minhag is a minhag. And you don't want to, if you like, belittle the Jewish people by telling them that the minhag is nonsense. And he himself kept the minhag, albeit that he grumbled about it when he kept it. Is Kineas going to be the same? Because we are going to see Gebroch. There is basically zero halachic concern that justifies Gebroch today. Okay, maybe there used to be, we'll see, but today there is no reason at all for there to be any halachic concern with Gebroch. However, more and more and more people don't eat Gebroch. And therefore, what do we do with this? Do we try and kind of crusade against it? We'll say there were those who tried and failed. Or do we just accept it and say, you know something, this is the world we live in, the Hasidim have become more and more dominant, even the Litvaks are really Hasidish, and therefore that's the world we live in. So we'll see what we do about it. Halachically, if you wet matzah, there is no reason at all to be concerned with that. Look at number three. The Gemara says, Tanya, Yotim b'rekik. Rekik is a what we call a matzah, a wafer. Rekik hashruya. You can be yotza on Seder night with matzah, even if it's soaked in water. Umavushal shalonimuach. And even if it's cooked, boiled, shalonimuach, as long as it hasn't disintegrated. Divri Rabbi Meir. That is Rabbi Meir's shita. Rabbi Yossi says, no. Yotzi b'rekik hasharui, you can be yotzi with a, what we call shruya, with a matzah which is wet, avalob umavushal, but not if it's been boiled. Afalpi shalonimuach, even if it hasn't dissolved. Meaning, machlokes Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Meir says you can do what you like to your matzah. It's always matzah. As long as it hasn't literally mushed into a dissolved solution, you can use matzah boiled on Seder night. You can use yaps and matzah soaked. Rabbi Yossi says, soaked yes, boiled no, not boiled. What is his problem with boiling the matzah? So number four, the Gemara in Bracha says about this shita, loika amar Rabbi Yossi has. And the only reason Rabbi Yossi has a problem there with boiled matzah is elamishum deba'inon tam matzah v'leika. You need to be able to taste the matzah on Seder night, and if you manage boil it, you won't taste anything. If you wet it, you'll still taste it. But if you boil it, you won't taste it. So the Gemara in Brachas clarifies that Rabbi Yossi has no problem with chametz, because once a matzah is baked, it can never become chametz. It can never, there's nothing you can do to a baked matzah to again make it chametz. Nevertheless, he says if you boil it up, it'll lose its taste, and that's his concern. The Rosh brings down in the 1200s in the 13th century in Germany. He says, number five, it is very common to wet matzah on Seder night. If there is an older person, or chole, or a sick person, they can't eat matzah because it's so hard. You see, even then, people always say, oh, back in the day they had soft matzahs. Well, Abdaska, the Svarim had soft matzahs. But you see, if you went to the Rosh's Seder, they also had crackers on Seder night. So we're not the only ones who are crackers. So if you're bashed, okay. So if it's too dry, soak it in water, he says. Add the marachach until it softens up. The achile, and they give it to the person to eat. Add the loy mismacha, as long as it doesn't disintegrate, the tanya, because we paskin in the brisa there, yotzim barakik hasharui. And therefore he said it was clearly the custom that people wet their matzahs on Seder night. I must tell you that when I'm eating matzah on Seder night, I often eat matzah with a glass of water. It's much easier to chew, it's much easier to swallow, much easier to digest. There is no halakhic reason, unless you don't eat gebroch. But someone who didn't eat gebroch would have a bit of a dead faint if they saw me eating my matzah with a glass of water. But clearly the Rosh said this is something that people did. Now, the Ra'avan. The Ra'avan is earlier than the Rosh. The Ra'avan is one of the early Balei Tosfos. He lived in Germany at the end of the 1000s, 1100s. And he says an interesting thing. And he recalls the earliest reference we ever have to the minhag, what we call today gebroch. Look at number six. The yesha einam rotzim lishrod ha-matzah b'marak b'leila seder. There are some people that don't want to put their matzah into the soup on Seder night. Crumble their matzah. So if you do this, crumble your matzah into your chicken soup. He says there are people who don't like doing that. Ki ra'es avoseihem sha'asukei. Because they saw this was a minhag of all of their parents and forebears. Meaning there was already a minhag for people not to crumble their matzah into the soup on Seder night. Ukesvurim, they think, says the Ravan, shehu mishum delo tachmet, because it doesn't become chomet. the enotein, but they're wrong. Meaning people who think this is a chometz issue are wrong. What is the issue? Shelo nagu limana mishurot ha-matzah barak ela kidei shiyeh tam matzah b'fihem. Like we saw in the Gemara, the only reason to avoid putting your matzah into your chicken soup is so that it still tastes of matzah. Kol ha-layla rishon shel Pesach. Especially on the first night of Pesach, when there's a special mitzvah of eating matzah. So he says, even though there were people who refrained from putting matzah into liquids on Seder night, that wasn't anything to do with chometz, even though they thought it was. Now I wonder today, in the minhag of gebrok, when you ask people, why don't you eat gebrok? I think many people will say, well, we're worried about chometz. And the Ravan already said that way back in the day, people used to say that 1,000 years ago. It wasn't true then, and it's not true now, we'll see. Another reason why people may have an issue with gebrok is maras ayin. And this is a great question about matzah meal. We spoke last week about kidneys. What about matzah meal? Is matzah meal not a problem of maras ayin? People see you cooking, baking, whatever, with matzah meal. The unsuspecting cook or housewife or whatever it was will see it. Will they think that that is really flour and they will bake with flour? Or does everybody know matzah meal is matzah meal? It doesn't really look exactly like flour, it doesn't feel like flour, etc. So is that a problem? So there have been those over the ages that have said yes, and this may be the problem with gebrok, the matzah meal problem. Have a look at number 7. The Ra'av Yah. The Ra'av Yah is famous on Seder night because he's the one that says that nobody has to lean anymore. More about him next week, because he says that leaning these days doesn't really mean anything, and it's not the way that anybody eats, so what are you actually doing by leaning? Now, we don't pasken like the Ra'av Yah, but we'll see his shita is very important in the whole issue of women's leaning. So the Ra'av Yah on this issue, nothing to do with leaning, says the following. Number 7. Va'afu shibishru kagon l'tinok l'zaken l'taken. If you cook up the matzah in order to fix it up, make it usable by a kid or by an elderly person. Ey momishon chimot. Don't worry about it. There's no chometz problem. But Tanya, and he brings what we've seen already. Rav Yosef Omer Yosef Merikik Hashrui Avalod Mushal Afal Pishul Oni Muach Vamrinim Aperi Ketim Mevarchim We Same Ketim Mevarchim Adkan Loka Amar Rav Yosef Ere Ligavi Matzah Deba'in And Tam Matzah Bepiv Veleker. We saw this just before. The only reason to avoid soaking it is so it tastes of matzah. V'halosh Shaych Lameima Ela B'Layla Rishona. The only reason to ever have an issue with the taste of matzah is on the first night. Meaning the rest of Pesach, you don't have to worry about the taste of matzah. You don't have to eat matzah at all. So you have to eat hamotzi on Shabbos for Lechem Mishnah, but you don't have to have matzah per se. Aval b'shayim er Pesach, sorry. The yeshe machmirim. There are those who are machmir, he says. The loy lisei lebitai, because they're worried about people getting mixed up, and so they won't cook up matzah meal dishes. V'chumra shel bal nefesh hi. This is a chumra of a bal nefesh. What's a bal nefesh? Someone's concerned to be machmir for their neshama. He says it's legitimate. Even back in the Middle Ages, he brings down that there were people who were concerned about cooking up matzah meals because, again, he doesn't give an exact reason why, but presumably the reason is, he says people will get confused. What will they get confused about? Presumably they'll get confused between matzah meal and flour. And this is... I understand, and that's why the Chai Odom said it was Kenya. Okay, they didn't have potato flour at the time of the Rav Yah. They only had matzah meal and regular flour.
Now, Maris Ayin, it would be potato flour.
Don't speak too loudly, they'll ban potato flour. But you're right, and that's exactly the reason the Chai Odom said potatoes were problematic. And Rav Moshe, we saw last week, says, but no one ever had a problem with potatoes because we don't expand kidneyot. We don't try and, says Rav Moshe, anyway. The Shari Tshuva, who's living already in the 1800s, records a little bit the history of matzah meal. And he says the following, number 8. The Ein Be'er Hativ, the Be'er Hativ lived in the 18th century in Germany. The Hamar Ashdam, and the Hamar Ashdam who was in the 16th century in Greece. And he says they all write the following. Kasal Shenoigim Ha'olam La'asot Sufganim. People make on Pesach Sufganim. Mimatsa Afuya, from Matsumi. I don't exactly know what Sufganim are, but there's some kind of cakes that they make. Kremzalach? Well, creme de lach are not puffy, are they?
Yes,
are they? Maybe it's just the way I have ate them. Fine. The Ein the Knesset HaGedola. And he says, but I want you to see the Knesset HaGedola. The Knesset HaGedola lived in Greece, this is an important point, Turkey, in the 17th century, in the 1600s. The Knesset HaGedola, Shekasar, he writes there, Shegazru, that they made a gezerah against Tigun, frying things in matzah meal. Mishum she isha achad, because there was a story of a woman, Tata, she made a mistake, lefi shirata le isha chaver, she saw one of her friends, shalaka kemach min matzah fuya, using matzah meal, for he svaras, she thought, shehu kemach sam, that it was regular flour, the asta came and she picked up regular flour from the butcher, from the, and she made cakes on matzah with regular flour, which is mamash chometz. So that happened once. So they made a gezeira in Turkey, no more matzah meal. V'huadin lepat kisnim, and that is the same is true of making cakes. Shikorin, I don't know what this is exactly, something in Greek, patashli, something like that. Aval sufganim, he says he thinks of sufganim, shedarkam la'asot tzveva Pesach, people always eat these things on Pesach, they know what they are. Loitau, people won't make a mistake. But he records already that there were those who were unhappy about the matzah meal. Or the Prichodosh he writes, who is also living in the 17th century in Italy, Chalak Bazet, he objected strongly on this minhag of not using matzah meal. The Kansavan, he writes, She'ein anu ligzor gzeiris midateinu. We can't make up our own chumros, he says. People use matzah meal. Well, who are you to turn around from your own idea because someone once made a mistake and you're going to ban matzah meal? The Chaybamin and Athena and the Shari Tshuva records in Germany here, in our countries, Ein Choshashim Lazer, nobody's bothered about matzah meal, Shekol Isha Yodat, because every woman knows, he says, Shehakamach, Kemach, Shemishtam Shimbo Pesach, the flour that they use on Pesach, Himi Matzah Boya, is from matzah meal. Ukatusha, and it's all ground up, or Tchina, or it's ground in different ways, it's pounded or ground. Rak sheyesh anshei maisa, but there are people who are machmir, shemachmir alas man ve'ein ochlim shum matzah shruya, they don't keep rocks, but it's nothing to do with it. So one of the reasons suggested for gebrochs is a matzah meal issue. The more you can avoid matzah meal, the more you're going to avoid confusion, the people are going to confuse matzah meal with flour, and in fact the Chochma Shlomo, who is Rav Shlomo Kluger, he recalls that this is also one of the reasons why people didn't eat gebrochs. Again, nothing to do with chometz, but to do with the issue of not confusing between regular flour and not regular flour. And we even saw a hint to this in the Gemara, we saw this Gemara last week in Pesachim, in number 9. It talks about Rav Papi here, in number 9, Rav Papi Sharile Leburdiki Debe Reish Galusa. We saw this last week, Rav Papi allowed the cooks in the Reish Galusa's house. The Reish Galusa was the head of the community in Babel, had a lot of staff, big palace. He allowed them, Lemamach Kedera Bechasisi, to thicken up the food with chasisi, which Tosfos says is lentil flour. I'm a Rava, and Rava objected, and he says, Ika the Shari ki hai milta the beduchta the shchichi avdi. Are you going to allow people to use lentil flour when there are avadim, when there are people who aren't really learned? They'll get confused. Ika the Amri, others say, no. Rava gufi machi le kedera bechasisi. Rava himself used lentil flour to thicken the soup. And there's a whole discussion here as to, according to Rava, who said, how can you allow people to use things that are confusing? And then the second version said, well, he himself used it. Is that a retraction? According to most Achronim, that's a retraction. Must be shown him as well. The Rava basically said it's fine. According to some, there's a Torah that says, no, Rava himself used lentil flour because he wasn't worried about himself getting confused. But he maintained that for people who might get confused, it is absolutely prohibited. And therefore, this is used also as a hint. Maybe matzah meal should have been a problem. Lamaisa, today, I don't think anyone has an issue itself with matzah meal. The one thing I have an issue with, and I do not understand this, I've never seen it in any country but in England, that if they have it in Israel or America, but Rakusen's matzahs, which I grew up on, because Rakusen's are from Leeds, and I'm from Leeds, so Rakusen's was, or Rakusen's as we used to call them when we lived in Leeds, they make matzahs all year round, which are chometz. And then on Pesach, they run matzahs, which are the cost of the Pesach. I don't know if anyone has ever heard of an identical matzah during the year, which is chometz, and the almost identical matzah, which on Pesach is matzah. And of course, it's all very well, okay, one's in a blue box and one's in a red box, but when you go to Tesco's or whatever it is for your matzah, I've seen this with my own eyes. They put the chometz stick matzahs on for sale on Pesach. And people don't know, because Tesco's are a non-Jewish shop. They don't know what's going on. They see boxes of matzah. They've got some left in the storeroom. They put them out because the Jews buy matzah for their Passover. And what do they care whether they're chometz or not chometz?
Like, where is it?
In England. Another reason not to go live in England. But, they have it same in New York. They eat chometz stick matzahs during the year. Well, if ever there was a michshol waiting to happen, it's chometz matzahs all year round. But and I'm sure that there's quite a number of people eating chometz on Pesach because they don't know the difference between matzah and other matzah, and they probably say things like, well, they just stick stickers on in the back, it's all the same really, and they charge double, all the usual things that people say, which is, I suppose, occasionally true, but in this case, definitely not. Now, the modern-day minhag of gebrochts. The modern-day minhag of gebrochts really starts, all the sources we've seen so far are older, and they're suggestive, maybe it's because of the matzah meal, maybe it's because of this age. The modern-day minhag of gebrochts really starts with the Alter Rebbe of Lubavitch. The Alter Rebbe of Lubavitch, who lived in the 1700s in Russia, he records the following in one of his tshuvas. Number 10. Odot itza bishul matzah shenit parala. Let's talk, he says, about the iser of cooking matzah which has been crumbled, of cooking matzah meal. Be'emet, he says, ki gam she'enu itzu gamur barur midina. I agree, says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first, the Alter Rebbe of Shlina Zalman of Liati. I agree that there's really no halachic problem with soaking matzah. I agree with that. Mikol makam ha-machmir tavo alav bracha. But to be machmir on this issue of gebroch, you'll get a brocha. Ve'enu mina matzim. It's not a weird minag either. Le'mo ki chumra beloy tam. You can't tell me that it's a chumra without a reason. El atam rabba ikka b'milta. There is a very significant reason for not eating gebrochts. Li'izah nechashash itzer de'oraita. It says, if you're worried about itzure de'oraita, of itzure min ha-Torah, don't eat gebrochts. Bekemach shenilka, fenikla, dechashin, and shema, lo bishul shapir. We're worried, he says, that the kemach, that the flour inside the matzahs was not properly cooked. And he says, v'hine, einenu ro'ah, we see with our very own eyes, v'har be'matzahs, in many cases with matzahs, there's a little bit of white flour still in the matzah, he says, we see with our own eyes, after they've been baked. This is because the dough is tough. And it's not kneaded properly. And when the taz writes, the b'dievet shari, that b'dievet it's okay if there's a little flour in the matzah. Hainu ha-matzah l'chudayu, that's to eat the matzah on its own. Aval l'sum b'marak, but to put it into the soup, mistapek ha-magin Avram, the Magin Avram worries whether that's true, it's okay, afilu b'dievet. Meaning, it could be if there's flour, he says, in your matzah that didn't get properly baked, and you then put it in your soup on Pesach, that's going to be chometz. Mikol Mokim, he says, Kevan she'einenu ro'at matzahs harbe she'matzah be'en kemach matzah. We see with our own eyes many matzahs with flour still in them. Nir la'ayin acharafir, it's visible after baking. Iyev she'lachish achush, you can't deny reality. You can't deny the fact that it's there. We see it. And then he goes on. U'mash she'loi hizkiru zeh ha'poiskim. Now he has a problem. Because is he the first one to come up with this? Why wasn't this a problem 100 years before him? Or 100 years before that? He seems to have stumbled upon a very serious halachi problem. Flour in the matzah, which is going to be covered. Masha lo yizkiru zeh ha-poiskim. The fact that the poiskim never mentioned this before, he says. Haynu mishum zeh einu matzah klal ela be'itza kasher. We only have a problem when the dough is tough. Shelo nilsho yap, which has not been kneaded properly. Ubedoiros harishonim in earlier generations, he writes. Hayashoyim harbe belisha. They used to take their time over kneading the dough. Ulegilgul, if you like, they would go over and over and over, ad shehayani lushyafa, until it was properly kneaded. Ad shemakurav zeh, esrim shana, but for the last 20 years or so, or yoter, nitpasha zehirut zebi Yisrael kedoshim, the holy Jews have suddenly become more concerned when they're baking matzah. Lemaher ma'od ma'od belisha. It's amazing. He's saying that because of a chumrah in trying to make matzahs quickly, and not waste any time. If anyone's ever been in a matzah factory, they're baking matzahs for Pesach, it's crazy. You know, they start the clock, and everyone runs around like headless chickens for 18 minutes, and there's music playing and pumping, and people are running around and screaming, etc. So says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, this is a relatively recent thing, that people go so fast. Back in the day, they went a bit slow and steady, which was obviously more of a concern. They may take too long, but at least they needed the dough properly. They're ain lush and yaffa yaffa. Now they don't need it properly. They're rushing so much to get in for the 18 minutes. There's flour left in the dough. And now we see those flour in the tuff, in the hard dough. Kinei b'chush, when we see with our own eyes, the medak tikin be'emet. If you really want to look, you'll see it with your own eyes. Bless you. V'hinei, mashu chometz be'ein she'al pnei ha'matzah l'mala. And now he goes into another issue, which is maybe there's not just flour in the matzahs, but flour on the matzahs. Meaning, you have a matzah factory, they've made the matzahs, they stack them in the corner, and now they're making more matzahs over in the other corner. And there's flour dust floating around the whole matzah factory, and the flour dust settles in a nice layer on top of your baked, finished matzahs, and unbeknown to you, when you take your matzah home and dip it in your soup, there's real flour on the matzah, and the flour goes in the soup and makes chometz. So that's another problem. When you're going to put your matzah into the soup, as everybody does on Shabbos, everybody crumbles their matzah into their soup. See a little bit of the Lubavitcher Rebbe's minhagim there. They're actually doing an isadoraisa, possibly. Because that's not flour mixed in with the matzah, that's flour mama sitting on the matzah. Meaning you can have a discussion about flour baked in the ovens, which was heated up. According to many poskim, even if it wasn't fully baked, it's not going to be able to turn into chometz. But raw flour, which mamash just lands on top of the matzahs, that for sure is going to turn into chometz if you put it in your soup. Yes?
But if the flour does settle on the matzah, doesn't it render the matzah?
No problem with the matzah, because the flour is not chometz. The flour is just flour. Now, commercially produced flour these days, by the way, is chometz. Because flour these days is bleached. Not the flour they use for matzahs, but flour you buy in the store during the rest of the year is often bleached, and the bleaching process could well make it into chometz. The flour, of course, that they use for matzahs is not bleached, it's very dry, and that flour we're not concerned with. So if you were to eat a matzah with that flour on it, that's fine. But the minute you stick it in your chicken soup, that's when it all goes wrong. Ki ein kan tarovitz klar. But he says the pkneidlach yeshadum mezedin tarovitz. Maybe that's less of an issue because at least it's all mixed in, etc. Now he says at the bottom here, mikol machim. Nevertheless, ein limchod v'hamon im hamikinim, hamon am hamikinim. Rather, don't be criticized people who don't keep this chumrah of gebrach. Kevin sheyesh lehem al mashi yismachu, because they have on what to rely. Meaning, you should never be nasty to the people who do eat gebrach. Because they have on whom to rely. The ha'ika al-das Rashi v'Rambam, because really we paskin like them. Avanami mashikasav ha'arizal, and he brings in a fascinating idea now. The Arizal wrote, l'hachmi kol chumrus b'pesach, to be machmi wherever you possibly can on Pesach. And we'll see that Arizal in a minute. Pshita sheyesh l'hachmi. It's clear to me, says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you should be machmi with it, because there's a Kabbalistic inyan to be machmi on Pesach, on the Arizal. When we call Yot Mokram, he gives you two exceptions. The Yom Tov Achron, on the 8th day Pesach, Kotev Gehilis and Choslaritz, HaMekel Mishum Simchas Yom Tov Loi Hifzit. You can be a little bit more Mekel on the 8th day Pesach. Why? Because the Issa Chometz is Derabonon, because it's second day Yom Tov. Or the May Peiris, and with non-water, spreads and liquids, Pshita De'en Lahach Meklar Kol HaPesach. You don't have to be Machmer at all Pesach. Meaning, he gives you two outs. If you really like eating a broch, and you want to follow the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he says, eat them on 8th day Pesach, or during the rest of the Pesach, you can have butter, you can have jam, you can have, you know, all of those things. But just don't use water. Now, I'm sure people know people who don't eat gebroch. Maybe people here don't eat gebroch. So just minhagim. Some people do eat butter on their matzah, who don't eat gebroch, and some people don't have anything to the matzah. The Chabadnikim today, many of them, are extremely careful. They eat their matzah in a little plastic bag, and they won't let anything get anywhere near the matzah. Interestingly, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe said that you need to do that. He's only worried if you eat matzah in mamash in water. He's not worried even about jam or jelly or butter or any of those things on your matzah. Yes?
But Chabad also has other things, like only having vegetables that you can peel on Pesach. Or if you drop cutlery on the floor, you can't use it again on the next Pesach. Nobody took up these things.
Well, some do. And it's all... There are many minhagim on Pesach, and all of these things... Because you can't peel them. So Miriam, all of those things, turn over the page to page 3, ultimately come out from this Arizal. And we need to talk about this for a minute. The Lubavitcher Rebbe invokes the Arizal, and he said the Arizal came along and said, the more machmir you can be on Pesach, the better. Let's see what the Arizal said, number 11. The Arizal Katav, he's brought here in the Berhetev, Hanizhar mimashehu chamet bePesach. If you're careful, even with a mashehu, even with the tiniest amount of chametz on Pesach, muftach lo shelo yechta kol hashana. You have a guarantee that you will not sin for the rest of the year. Now, people obviously like that idea, and therefore they jump on that Arizal. Now, I'm not a Kabbalist, and therefore you need to speak to your local Orthodox Kabbalist about what exactly the Arizal means and where he's coming from. But it seems clear to me that there have to be limits, even to the Amit, to this Arizal. Number one, he talks about chometz. That if you're careful with the slightest amount of chometz, then you have a guarantee that you won't sin the rest of the year. Does that apply to things which have nothing to do with chometz at all? Like kidney art, for example. No one thinks kidney has anything to do with chometz. It's a separate minhag. And we saw last week a machlokes between the Chasam Sofer, who says, yes, our job is to bring in chumras on Pesach, that is legitimate. And Rav Kook, who was also coming from a Kabbalistic place, and Rav Kook said, no, on the contrary, with something like kidney art, there's more of a Kabbalistic inyan to be lenient than to be strict. Now, Rav Kook knew his Kabbalah as well. Why wasn't he worried about this Arizal? Presumably he said this Arizal doesn't apply to things which are just nothing to do with chometz at all. You can't take every single chumrah that you made up last week and say the Arizal gives me a brocha. That's not true. The Arizal obviously are related to certain things, but not to other things. Also, this idea that you have a guarantee you will never see sin the rest of the year, I assume this is part of a context of an individual who leads a life of yirat shamayim, avoidance of these things. Meaning, I don't think this is some kind of a magic segula that you can do whatever you like in other areas of halacha, and then as long as you're mega machmer on Pesach, your neshama is safeguarded. I think that seems to be rather foolish, and I don't think that's at all what the Arizal meant. Presumably, for someone who is makpid and careful in other areas of halacha and has a holistic, rounded understanding of the need to be careful in halacha, including bein adam lechaveiro, bein adam lemakom, it would being honest in business, etc., etc., then this idea of chometz, of not eating chometz, that's the icing on the cake. If you eat icing on the cake, if you eat cake on Pesach, so that is the icing on the cake. But again, I don't think you can just take the Arizal and apply it across the board. Having said which, some of these minhagim you mentioned, Miriam, are long-standing ones. Not using cutlery that drops on the floor, even though people have scrubbed their floors so hard there's probably no chometz alive anywhere near the floor. Minhag Yisrael, and I bring you back to the first Ramah that we saw when the Ramah gave the minhag about the pot lids, and he said even though there's really no reason for it, minhag Yisrael is minhag Yisrael, and if that's your minhag, then be happy. Yes. Yeah, but again, that's not the minhag. The minhag is the cash of the cutlery. Yeah, the cash. Yeah, there's another minhag that they won't use the cutlery until they've cashed the cutlery. Meaning, if you think about it, halach. It wasn't made up. I promise you, I've seen the minhag. People don't, if they don't use cutlery, that they drop on the floor. They certainly wash it, and as far as I'm aware, they would kasher it as well, even though there's no way at all that it can ever pick up, like, trace, if you like, for chometz on the floor, so it's cold. Oh, so I think this point is a very good one. We're not really talking about cleaning for Pesach today, but it's clear that our houses today are infinitely cleaner than the houses were back in the day, because they just didn't have the ability to clean them to the same degree. But I think that is definitely the case. Now, let's go. The Mitnagdim fights back. Let's have a look in on page number 3. Number 12. The Shulchan Aruch writes, how thick can your matzah be? So he says, Ein oisim b'pesach pat ava tefach. You can't make matzah on Pesach if it has a thickness of a tefach. A tefach is just over 3 inches. That's a tefach. So if your matzah is this thick, you have a halakhic problem. Says the Magen Avraham after number 12, Nirali, the b'dieved mutter. But the Eved, even if you made your matzah more than a tefach, it's probably fine. Meaning, people used to eat matzahs which were this thick. Comes along the Shaarei Tshuva, who is living in, as I said, in Germany, the beginning of the 1800s. And he says the following, actually in Russia, excuse me, at the beginning of the 1800s, he is living at the same time as the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he's dealing with this new minag, if you like, of kitniot, of Gebroth. And he says the following, number 13. Vagam Nira, Shadchalat Chomezeh. I think he says that this Chumrah began, Yatsa Mimasha Hayanogi Mikodim La'asot Al Pesach Matzat Avot. That they used to make very thick matzah. Avot Harbe, after Loi Hayat Kishir Tepach, even if it's less than a Tepach, it's still pretty thick. Mikol Mokum Hayu Avot Harbe, they were very thick. Umehem Hayu Oizim HaKemach LePesach, Alide Greira Uberib Eisen. And they used to make flour on Pesach with a rib eisen. My grandma, I didn't even know that a rib eisen had any other name than a rib eisen when I grew up. Because my grandmother always called it a rib eisen. If you don't know what a rib eisen is, it's a grater. Okay? Literally a rubbing iron. A rib eisen. So they used to make flour with a rib eisen, and it was thick, it wasn't properly ground, and they used to make thick masses. So that's a recipe, literally, for disaster. It's very common then that these things won't get cooked properly as much as it's meant to be. And in truth he says, every rabbi in every town has to make sure that he looks out for this. If people are going to cook thick matzahs, the rabbi of the town has to be very careful. Because I agree, it's a recipe for disaster. Badly ground flour, thick matzahs, you're probably going to have flour in your matzah. That's where the Lubavitcher Rebbe is coming from, he says. And he's absolutely right in principle. Aval ha'idna, but these days, he says, it kashadara. The generation has improved. V'ruba de'anshe ein oifim matzahs avas klav. People don't make thick matzahs anymore. Rak rakikin dakim. They make thin crackers. And as if you've ever been to a matzah factory, you'll see they roll them with these, the pins. With the spikes. And they roll them and they roll them and they roll them until they're completely dead. There's nothing in the matzah. It's totally, totally the flattest, hardest, brittlest thing you could possibly imagine. The hakemach nasi alidei shemi yabshim otav tanur, and flour is much more, it's better manufactured flour. Now they dry it in a tanur. The achakach tachna bereichaim, and then they put it through a proper mill. Udachem obeducha, or they put it through a pestle and mortar. The azaluhu achashashus halalu, and therefore all these concerns of gebroch have gone away. Meaning, yes, I understand you're worried about there being flour inside the matzahs, but it's not shaykh anymore. Our matzahs aren't like that anymore. Our matzahs are thin. We have better grinding techniques. Don't worry about gebroch.
How about
Yemenite? So one can only assume that they're careful, they're very careful, that they grind the flour properly and they knead the dough properly and that they don't have flour in the middle. Having said that, there is a big machloikas, and I don't know what the Yemeni position on it is, that even flour which is unbaked in the middle of the thick matzah may not be a problem on Pesach either, even if it comes into contact with water, because it may be that now it's been heated, so it's not going to be able to be chometz anymore, even if it's still flour. What about the Lubavitcher Rebbe's concern of flour on top of the matzahs? Well, that has been resolved today by our matzah baking factory technique. If you've ever been to a matzah baking factory, there is no flour anywhere near any of the matzahs. Nowhere near. What they do is they have the flour in a separate room. When you're ready to start the 18 minutes, they put the flour in a bowl, they bring it in, a little window opens, the water pours in, and then it's immediately turned into dough. There's no dust, there's no flour floating around anywhere. The matzahs, as soon as they're baked, they're whisked away, wrapped up immediately, put into packaging, put in a separate room. There is no chance of any flour dust going anywhere near your matzah, and therefore, that reason as well today, maybe that was a legitimate reason in the time of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but that reason has gone away as well. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, also at that time, a little bit before the Lubavitcher Rebbe, although they must have overlapped a little bit. When did he live? Yes, he died in 1776, so they did overlap. He writes the following, number 14. Shemitnei chashash rachok, such a far-fetched concern, ki hai like this, ein limnoa simchas yomtev. You can't stop simchas yomtev for such a far-fetched. Simchas yomtev is a din doraisa. I need my knedelach. Vehevi raim is ivri aviv hagon. He brings a rye from his father, Adava amata shriya shehamit chasdim. Those who are mit chased. I'm not sure mit chased is an entirely polite way of looking at it. Maybe it is, but mit chased. They become chasidim. They're frumer than everybody else. Porshim mehem. They avoid this. For who zal satar called varav hamachmir? Called divrei hamachmir. He went against the chacham tzvi, his father, went against the machmir. And then the Yaivetz writes at the end, you could always rely on Rav Yaakov Emden for a pithy comment that really makes you smile. Or the emes, he says, ein hadat sovelet kol achumrat hamitchad shimachol yom. I can't stand all these new chumras. Every day someone comes up with a new chumra. I can't stand it. In case you thought that you were only hearing that today, the Yaivetz comes out with that. The Vilna Gaon records in the book about his practice in the Maaseh Rav, was put together by his Talmidim, number 15, Mutar le'echol ma'achalim v'tavshilim ha'asui mikemach matzahs. You're allowed to use things which are cooked and made from matzah meal. We don't have to worry about things that were not baked properly. We don't have to worry. Even if it wasn't cooked properly, it's no worse than parched grain. And the Vilna Gaon, there is a reputable story brought down by Rav Moshe Sternbuch and others, that Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the main Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, travels to see the Gaon specifically on Chol HaMoed Pesach to see if he ate Kneid Lach. And he did. Okay? And he went there specifically to record that. More about that in a couple of minutes. So the Vilna Gaon ate Kneid Lach. Rav Avadya Yosef. Now, without any surprises, Rav Avadya Yosef is not particularly bothered by the Minhag of Shruya, but he charts its progress, and he brings down here in number 16, I'm not going to read it all through now, he brings down the Chacham Tzvi, the Rabbi Yaakov Emden, sorry, the Yaivetz. He brings down the Gaon Mivilna. He also brings down the Chasam Sofer. Now the Chasam Sofer is interesting, because the Chasam Sofer records in his own Minhagim that he ate Kneid Lach on Pesach. And yet when he comes to describing the mitzvah of Gavroth, he describes that it's an appropriate minhag. It says mitzvah precious. It's an appropriate minhag. So everyone's asking on the Chasam Sofer, how are you telling me that Gavroth is an appropriate minhag, and yet you eat Kneid Lach? So Rav Moshe Sternbuch in the Tshuva that we'll see a little bit of, although we're not going to see this bit, he says, I don't know what the problem is. Clearly he felt it was a reasonable, legitimate minhag for people who were careful, but he respected the minhag of his forebears, who did eat Kneid Lach, and he himself ate Kneid Lach. The Chasam Sofer lived in a place where there were many Chassidim, and the minhag was very much not to eat Gavroth, so he didn't want to upset the apple cart there, so he respects the minhag, but he himself does not have that minhag, and he did eat Kneid Lach. Look in the last three lines of number 16, says Rav Avadya Yosef, Umi shenag lahachmer, someone who wants to be machmer, shelo lishrot matzah b'pesach b'choshvo sheken ro yapi alacha. Someone who wants to be machmir and thinks that halachically you're not allowed to eat gebroch, shruya, and pesach, they're just mistaken. Rashai levatel minhag, minhago, beli hatara. They don't even need hataras nadarim for that. Because whenever you take on a minhag and you think it's halacha, you think it's required, but it's not really required, it's just a mistake. And therefore if you decide to stop, you don't even need Hataras Nadarim. We get this quite often, girls at school who, you know, come to us and they say, you know, we grew up not eating Gebrocht, and I was always told that, you know, this was absolutely required, otherwise it's all chometz, and now I've realized that, you know, not everybody does this, and I'm going to people who don't have a problem with this. Do I have to do Hataras Nadarim, etc.? Rav Avadya says, if you thought it was halakhically required, you don't need Hataras Nadarim. So who minag betal? Because he was a minag by mistake. But if you knew that it was actually allowed, but you knew it was a chumrah, and now you want to cancel the minhag, you have to do a proper taras nadarim. As long as you didn't say b'lineida, it's always good to say b'lineida on these minhagim, etc. But he says if you did realize it was a chumrah, then you do need hataras nadarim. There is a minhag recorded by Rav Moshe Sternbuch that there were old Litvaks that didn't eat gebroch dafka on the first night of Pesach, but they did eat in the rest of Pesach. Why should that be? Why would there be a problem not eating matzah with other things on the first night of Pesach. So Rav Sternbuch records in number 17 the following. Nimsa tam lo lechol knedlach bePesach. I can give you reasons not to eat knedlach on Pesach. Af im ein chashash chimut klal, even though there's no problem of chomet. She klayot einu machnet, because parched grain, parched flour will not become chomet. She knedlach dino kematza ashira. Knedlach amatza ashira. Ve'ein lechol matza ashira bePesach. She mitzvasa lechem oinim. Umavatl bekach biyadayim hamatza ashira. Hamitzvah Asa, excuse me. Meaning, what's he talking about? What is Matzah Ashira? So Matzah Ashira is matzah which is baked together with meiteres, with fruit juice, with honey, with wine, with milk, etc., etc. Not usually with milk, because otherwise it would be milchik matzahs, but with things like that.
It has to be kneaded. Exactly.
So classical Matzah Ashira is only Matzah Ashira when the actual flour is kneaded with the wine or with the juice, etc. What is the concern of matzah ashira? So there are two problems with matzah ashira. Number one, matzah ashira, there is a concern it might become chomet, according to some shitot. It might be machmit more quickly. You don't necessarily have 18 minutes. And therefore, the minhag of Ashkenazim is not to eat matzah ashira at all on Pesach, except for cholim. People who are sick are allowed to eat matzah ashira, the Ashkenazim. Sfarim do eat matzah ashira. But the Ashkenazim do not eat Matzah Ashira. But there's a second concern of Matzah Ashira, which you cannot be yotzi with Matzah Ashira the mitzvah of Matzah on Seder night. It's nothing to do with Chometz, because Seder night requires lechem only. It has to be a poor man's bread, not a bread which is baked with wine or fruit juice. Rav Sternbuch is recording that the minhag of Rav Chaim Britzker was that for Seder night, he was machmir that it was even Matzah Ashira when it was mixed after the baking. And therefore, to take matzah meal and mix it with schmaltz and make knedlach, etc., etc., I'm not sure people don't use schmaltz anymore, but whatever. To make knedlach and eat them on first night Seder, he says that is a problem because you're meant to be eating lechem only, and they understood that the mitzvah of any matzah you eat on Seder night should be lechem only, and by eating knedlach, you're not eating lechem only, you're eating matzah ashira. It's a chumrah, because really that's not matzah ashira. And really, lechem only just means the matzah. You have to eat the matzah, you can eat knedlach after the matzah. But he records that this was a minhag, and some people observe this. I've never met anyone today who observed this, but they bring that down even by the Litvaks. As I mentioned to you, the minhagim of Gebrochta are many and varied. Some people do eat them on 8th day Pesach. Some people don't eat them on 8th day Pesach. Some people will eat them on 8th day Pesach using their regular Pesach kelim. Why? Because they say it's going to be a year until we use the kelim again, and there is a psak of the Chacham Tzvi that any taste after 12 months for sure will be gone. We don't rely on this for real chomet, but for gebrocht, they're not bothered. Other people say, hang on, it's not going to be a year till you next use these kelim, because it's going to be a year minus 8 days, because it's 8th day Pesach, and next year you're going to use them on 1st day Pesach. So you can't rely on this. So some people have different kelim to eat their gebrocht on 8th day Pesach, and other people say we will only use the Pesach kelim on a leap year, when next year is a leap year, because it's more than 12 months, etc. So you see, people take this very seriously. Could I just trouble someone to get me some more water, please? I'm sorry, I need it. Thank you very much. Let's have a look in the final few lines on this, and then we'll talk about minhagim generally at the end and finish off. Rav Moshe Sternbuch gives us a halachic history of the knedlach and some interesting vignettes. Key number 18. Ule'ika ha'inyan. Barur, he says, it's clear. Sha'achasim sofa lo'i hichzik b'minag ha'nimnaim me'achila shrui b'pesach. It's clear that the Chasim Sofa himself did not keep the minag of not eating gebrocht. He himself ate gebrocht. U'b'vadai rak, he came etzel rabba achasid shepaguna. He saw this on his own teacher, Rabbi Nathan Adler. Nathan Adler, not the same Nathan Adler that came to England as a chief rabbi, but a cousin of the same. Thank you very much. He saw that he himself ate gebrocht, and therefore the Chasim Sofer ate it. Thank you so much. The Gro was not machmir. We've already heard that the Rav Chaim Volozhiner went to visit the Gro on Chol HaMoed to see if he ate knedlach. It's interesting, Chol HaMoed. Say tonight, I don't know if he ate knedlach. But look at this story. We have a Kabbalah with us, he says. And Rav Moshe Sternbuch is a you know, bona fide litvak of the highest order. Okay? So he says, Hiktid al Chatno, that the Gro's son-in-law came for Pesach. And the Gro was particular, didn't like what his son-in-law did. Sha'achal al Shuchano, that the son-in-law ate at the Gro's table. The Hichli Bashruya, and he wouldn't eat Gebrocht. The Sidr Chatano, and his son-in-law organized Im HaRabbanit with Mrs. Kramer, Rabbanit Kramer, the Vilna Gaon's wife. Lo shall the rotesh shelo, when it came to his soup, lo yachnisu knedlach, that he's going to have his soup without knedlach. He made a little private deal with the Rebbetzin when the Vilna Gaon wasn't looking. The Hagro Rav, the Gro noticed, he says, Saradava, the Amalah, and he told him there and then, Sha'afilu klayav einu machmir, fa'ein makom lahachmir. There is no reason to be machmir. Meaning the Gro, you can't get away with that in front of the Gro. The Gro notices these things. And he told his son-in-law, why are you being makpid on Sharia? It's actually quite brave to take on a Chumrah that the Vilna Gaon, your father-in-law, doesn't take on. But he thought he was going to get away with it, and he didn't. אבל החסידים נהגו להחמיר בזה מאוד בכל מיני חומרות. We know the חסידים are very particular about this. כפי ששמעתי, המגיד ממדריץ' התחיל לנהוג פרישס בזה ויוצא. Interestingly, he says this really began with the Maggid of Medrash, who was the Rebbe of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. It didn't, interestingly, begin with the Baal Shem Tov. We don't know what the Baal Shem Tov did. He may have eaten Gebroch, but the Maggid of Medrash apparently started it. וכפי ששמעתי, הקודש החופץ חיים. Oh, what's with the חופץ חיים? Lo achal shruya b'pesach. He didn't eat gebrocht either on Pesach. Now the Chofetz Chaim was a litvak, and therefore why is he not eating gebrocht on Pesach? Aval lo ag b'zeh od chumras yoseh. He didn't have any other chumras, meaning he just didn't eat it with the liquid on Pesach. Okefi anishma panu she'amata shal agro, and he has a problem now. Why is the Chofetz Chaim allowed to be more machmir than the Vilna Gaon? Oh, so that could be a good answer, practical answer. But the answer he gives is, he says, look, the Gaon wasn't machmir because the matzahs of the Gaon there, fubetachlis ahidu, obviously the Gaon's matzahs were much better made than our matzahs, he says. V'lo shaykh etzleinu chashash, etzlo chashash shal kemach. And the Gaon wasn't worried about the flour, shalo nefa v'yachmit. Aval anon v'didan yesh makom lahachmir. He suggests that maybe the Chofetz Chaim was allowed to be more machmir than the Gaon, because his matzahs were not as high quality as the Gaon's matzahs. I don't know. First of all, I doubt very much that the Chofetz Chaim ate anything other than the highest quality matzahs. And second of all, I think it's probably more likely that his wife drove them in than he did. But I don't know much about the Chofetz Chaim's wife. Does anyone know the Chofetz Chaim's wife? What was the background? The wife of the Chofetz Chaim, where was she from? Yeah. I'm not sure. People often have very interesting wives from different backgrounds. Nachon. Yeah, I mean, I don't know when this was recorded. I assume it's his second wife. I mean, for example, we see Rav Kook. Rav Kook's father was a classic Litvak who was learnt in Volozhin under the Netziv, and he married a Chabad Chassid. His wife was from the Chassidut of Chabad. So people do marry interesting, different kind of permutations and combinations which have an impact on that. Fine. And then he says, finally, from Rav Moshe Sternbuch in number 19, Sof Davar HaChashash B'Knedak Rachok Ma'od. At the end of the day, it's Chenedlach really a fine. Achein be'isach chametz b'pesach ein shi'ul l'chumras. But there is no real limit to chumras on Pesach. Siagim u'gudarim, different kinds of fences, shi'israel kiblu alatman achein b'chol levavot doresh Hashem. As long as you are doing it l'shem shamayim, more about that in a minute when we finish off, I don't mind, he says, how many extra chumras you take on. That's all legitimate, especially on Pesach. It's a good thing to do. The Mishnah Berurah, who I've given the last word on this issue himself, of course, is the Chofetz Chaim, he writes that you're allowed to eat gebrocht on Pesach, which you would expect him to write. In the last line, he says, however, of number 20, Mikol Makom, Misha Noig Bechumra Zo, if you find somebody who keeps this minhag of not eating gebrocht, Ein Maznichin Oto, don't make fun of them. It's interesting. Because people do sometimes have a little bit of a go at people who don't eat gebrocht. Sometimes, you know, the other side has the last laugh. I know more than one family where they were brought up with a clear literature, you know, anti-gebrocht, or anti the people who don't eat gebrocht bias in their home. And then, of course, the daughters end up marrying guys who don't eat gebrocht, and then, you know, they get the last laugh, if you like. So says the Mr. Brewer, and we'll finish with this issue on over the page, you know, that at the end of the day, if a minhag is a legitimate minhag, you can't make fun of people doing it. Having said that, just let's turn over to page 5 for a minute and look at two final issues. When is a minhag not a minhag? There comes a point when you really have to draw a line and say, come on, this is ridiculous. Why do we do this? The Rashi brings down number 21. Minhag mashma Torah minhag yesh badava. There has to be a Torah in it. Minhag kosher. It has to be a minhag kosher. It can't actually go against the halacha. Now, clearly, gebroch doesn't go against the halacha unless you allow it to. Now, the Yaivetz was worried about Simchas Yontif. The Simchas Yontif is a real doraita. And also, there are other issues. If people are unable to eat their matzah properly because they won't put it with water, older people or whatever, elderly people, so the fear of gebroch cannot be entitled, cannot enable them to not fulfill the mitzvah doraita. There are also people who are so particular about gebroch that they won't leave leftovers on their plates, and they will wash the plates on the yontif so the plates are clean, so nothing gets on the plates, etc. That's a problem, because you're not allowed to wash the prepare on yontif after yontif. So once the minhag starts to actually get in the way of the halacha, then that's a problem. And I just bring you a fairly famous quote in number 23 of the Baalei HaTosfos. They say, Gam katata she'ein l'shanot ha-minhag mipi halav. You should never change minhagim. But he says, I want to warn you. Minag ze gehenum lemafreya. Minag, the word minag is gehenum, if you spell it backwards. She in shoytim nahagu, because there are certain things that fools have as a minhag. Chachamim loy nahagu. People who are chachamim will not do those things. Va'afilu minag hagon, eino oke halacha ele en kenos tefet. So he's not talking about gebroch, obviously. But he is talking about the dangers of allowing minhagim, which are clearly on the head, and a minhag which is on its head is gehenna. I just want to make one final comment, which is, so there is a danger to minhag as well, which we have to be careful about. There is a mitzvah in the Torah of loisis goydadu, number 24. Loisis goydadu means not to cut in grief over the dead. And Chazal picked up on that, the word loisis goydadu in number 25, said lo ta'asu agudot agudot. From the word tit godadu. Lotasu agudot agudot. Don't make factions, groups. Eged is a group together. That's why eged is called eged. Doesn't mean you can't take an eged bath. It means don't make agudot agudot. And then the Eri explains, and others explain as well. What's this got to do with lo tit godadu? Meaning, how did Chazal make a connection between not cutting in grief over the dead and not making factions within Judaism? And then the Eri and others explain the following. That you can have different minhagim, because people don't have to be carbon copies of each other. They don't have to be cardboard cutouts. People want to have individualism. You're allowed to have minhagim. We encourage minhagim. But at the point at which we begin to forget that we're really guf echad, we're really one people, and the minhagim begin to divide us, it's a little bit like the hand picking up a blade and cutting the head. What does the hand think that you're doing? It's the same body. What are you doing to yourself? Meaning if you're hit, if by accident you hit your hand with a hammer, your right hand hits your left hand doesn't pick up the hammer and hit the right hand and say, how dare you? You know, it's the same body. It's the same person. So the danger of minhagim, of loy tasu aguda taguda, is the danger that sometimes our minhagim begin to divide us. And we forget that actually, bottom line, we are really guf echad, we're one people, minhagim are beautiful, as long as they are expressions of individuality, and as long as we all understand what is the halacha, and keep the halacha, and understand the common halacha between us, then please God, the minhagim will only bring ora v'simcha to the Jewish people and nothing else. Okay, next week, women leaning, and then it's time to actually lean and eat some matzah.